Welcome back, DGS on KMOX. You know, I found something out yesterday. I borrowed Nick's car because I have a Jeep and it holds exactly nothing. So I borrowed his tracks and he drove my Jeep, which he said was like driving the moon rover. And 1120 came in great on his car. Yeah. I mean, 98.7 came in better. And then the Odyssey app, of course, is perfect. But yeah, it's kind of cool. I picked you guys up just outside of Columbia.
Oh, wow.
Pretty neat.
Yeah, it's pretty good reach. And that's daytime.
Yeah.
At nighttime, you could down all the way to the Rockies.
I don't understand all that.
Yeah.
That's nutty. Okay, so the Kansas City Chiefs moving to St. Louis is just silly talk like I used to talk about dating a cheerleader, right?
Yeah. Look, this is how things go. We watched this kind of thing play out with the Rams, right? They're always trying to find a way to create leverage points to get the money they want from taxpayers. And by they, I mean professional sports owners and the leagues themselves, right? This is happening in baseball now. We saw that Oakland moving to Vegas, they're moving to Vegas, and that whole process has been going on. And then you had a guy just yesterday on that topic who works in Vegas. I think he's I think he's the CEO of Bally, the casino.
Yeah,
saying that the A's have been looking at this for 10 years. Like, so it was kind of like the Rams thing where they pretended they were trying to stay, but they were always planning on going. So we've seen how dirty this game is up close and personal. And what's happening over in KC is, look, they're getting pressure because there was a bill either passed or moved forward recently in the state of Kansas that would bring both the Royals and the Chiefs across the border.
Like 10 miles.
Into Kansas. Yeah. I mean, it's not a thing. It's like, again, it would be like going to the racetrack over here on the east side. That's how far it would be for a lot of the fan base. So it's not like you're removing the team from the metropolitan area where people are fans. Moving it here would be think about, put it this way. Here's your analogy. If the Cardinals move to Kansas City, how would that impact the fan base? You basically lose the fan base, right? They're not going to lose their fan base and move a team across the state. Their fan base is strong. They sell out games. The team is winning. They're just trying to extort as much money as they can out of whichever taxpayers they can.
Everyone will be buddies again when the deal's over.
In 5 years, when the stadium opens, everybody's going to be like, woo, what a stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how this game is played. I mean,
what's wrong with Arrowhead? Is it really dilapidated?
No, I don't think so. It's just older. You know, the older stadiums don't have all the really new, cool things. If you look at Jerry World in Dallas, mm-hmm. or you look at the stadium down in Phoenix, the Arizona Cardinals stadium, the newer stadiums have a lot more amenities and a lot more ways for the team to make money with, you know, luxury suites that are really top of the line. You know,
wasn't Arrowhead voted one of the, like, least, like, comfortable and
yeah, it's old
amenities filled for, like, the players.
Right. Yes, that's true too. And it's an older stadium. And the same thing with Kauffman Stadium. It's viewed as a classic. People love the look of it, but it's not new. It's not fancy. It doesn't have a lot of the big revenue generating new technology and new features that a lot of the new stadiums have. So if you are I believe there are leases coming up and all that. That's why this is coming to a head, I think. But the bottom line is that the owners of the two teams want new stadiums. They're trying to get the money from the taxpayers of Kansas City, you know, and the counties surrounding there, and it's not been working. And now Kansas has made a push, and from a taxpayer standpoint, that's worse for Missouri, right? You're losing a lot of tax revenue if those teams move across the border into Kansas. But the question is, when you do the end of the day math, is what you lose going to be comparable to what you would have to spend to build new stadiums? And most economists say, no, it's not worth it.
Did they redo Wrigley?
I mean, they renovated it. Yeah.
But like, what if they wanted to tear down Wrigley?
Well, first of all, it's a National Historic Site.
Right. So my point is there's a real fine line between old and classic.
Exactly. And they have that designation as it's a historical site. And they couldn't tear it down even if they wanted to. But they could move. Like, they could move, you know, away from the lake. They could move to the suburbs. They could move 18 blocks over, whatever. I mean, I don't know where there's space. But the Cubs could move out of Wrigley Field, but they could not tear it down which is why they did what they did and added to it, right? They put up the big scoreboard. They added some higher seating that wasn't there before and made some improvements to it. Yeah.
So, Rach, you're dreading your big night out?
Yeah, I'm going to a concert tonight with my friends, and I know I'm going to have a good time. And yet, the anticipation of doing something social, I'm just like,
the classic conundrum.
Yeah, like, why am I doing this? Why am I going to go spend quality time with my loved ones?
My area of comfort gets narrower by the day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's got to be exactly what I want with exactly the right person or people. Convenient, no bad parking. No, it's like,
yeah,
it's just like anything at all. I'm like, I'm out.
I know, I'm driving my friends crazy because I'm like, I've never been to Chaffetz Arena. What's the parking sitch? Like, what's going on? I already said, like, I'm probably going to leave early. I'm just going to plant that seed now. I'm definitely not staying for the encore.
I'm so glad this is happening to you at 32.
Oh, man.
It makes me feel better.
I used to mock you guys because I used to be like, you guys are crazy. I'm like, just go have fun. Go be with your friends. Why are you like, don't be weird about it. Just go have fun. And then now I'm like, You better cancel this now.
Quick, get meningitis.
Yeah, you better cancel this event now.
I can't miss the night of sitting on my couch watching TV.
Yeah, you better see me in the worst attitude if you make me go out to a concert with all of my closest friends.
Let me guess, Wheels is not like this.
I am not.
He gets excited.
I mean, don't get me wrong. There are things that I would be like, I'd rather not do that, but not something like if it's dinner with friends, yeah, let's go. I'm going to have fun. If it's a concert, I mean, you know how many concerts I'm going to go to this summer? I might go to 6 or 7. There's just so many good ones this summer. And you guys are welcome to join me.
And I want to be clear. This is in no way a reflection on my friends because it's two of my really good friends. And it's Death Cab for Cutie, which I've seen several times. And I love this band. And they're playing like this album front to back. It's going to be amazing. I know it's going to be amazing. I just can't stop.
One of these days, when
like
we are able to beam in and beam out like Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
What a game changer.
Because for me,
it really is the before and after.
Yes, getting there.
The
is
during
so,
is great.
And like Rachel brought up already, like parking anywhere is such a nightmare. And you know that if you're like, maybe I'll just bite the bullet, but biting the bullet and taking the parking lot across the street is going to cost you $55 or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's absurd. Like, and that's the stuff that like, you can hear me getting worked up. I'm not even going to this.
For things that I don't really care about, I'm exactly like that. Like I don't care about fireworks. I don't want to deal with the crowd, the parking. I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to do any of that because I don't want to wait 2 hours in the car to get home because I don't care about fireworks.
Kevin doesn't care about fireworks is not a statement I thought I would ever hear. That's shocking.
Yeah.
But like, I'll do all of that.
We all would have guessed he'd have been like, let's go.
No. You are a firework.
I hate fireworks so much. It's like, oh, hey, never
too
seen
loud?
Those before. No, it's just, it's the same thing as I was a kid. They haven't changed. It's the same damn thing. I've seen the show before. But like, I will do all of that for a football game, a baseball game, a concert, because I know I'm going to have fun.
Yeah.
But it's just the things that are more that aren't.
You want to see Rage get even, angrier? Met Gala.
Oh my goodness. It was last night.
Oh, it's that time again.
I hate the Met Gala. I think it's so stupid. And especially in 2024, we just went through a global pandemic. First of all, everyone's forgetting about that. Look at what's going on in the world. Everything's melting down. People are dying. Read the room. Yeah. Why do you have to show up on the red carpet with your stupid dress that took, 40 hours to complete and cost
$20,000?
So let me tell you what I saw. Probably made in a sweatshop.
Exactly.
CNN today. My girl, Sarah Seidner, lover, when they're going to the story about the Met Gala for the first time of the morning, she goes, well, now for something, forget the word she used, but it was basically dumb and meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
And the other two ladies who were on with her really jumped on her and said, this is not just fashion, it's art. And art transcends every problem going on in the world. And we need art. And she was like chasing, and she's like, okay, I guess you're right.
Yeah,
okay,
we need really rich people to rub in our faces how much money
right,
they have.
Like, we need art. I agree with that statement. Do I think that Kim Kardashian wearing Givenchy or whatever she was wearing last night is necessarily a piece of art? No, it's just, she's just flexing once again. And like, look how much money I have. Look at how important I am. I'm popular enough to be invited to this and getting my picture taken from all angles.
You cannot differentiate between your event and the Hunger Games.
Right.
You should probably dial it back.
What is the Met Gala?
It's
a fundraiser.
For
the Met Gala fund? Charity. Yes.
Yeah, okay. The Metropolitan Arts.
Because, I mean, all I know it for is that everybody's wearing crazy things.
Right.
And that's basically
Wasn't somebody wearing an umbrella?
I don't know.
That was me. I was wearing
an umbrella. No, like it was an umbrella with like...
Andrew was like, you're going to have to eat me when you eat the rich.
It looked like a jellyfish is what it looked like. Like an umbrella and then like a screen coming down around it and you couldn't even see who was in there.
The one that bothered me the most was Cardi B because she had 8 men with her just to carry the train of her dress.
Yeah.
There's just something very...
And why is Cardi B even invited? Cardi B isn't even like, is she even like relevant anymore?
The Anna Wintour from Vogue like loves her.
Okay.
I know this against my will, but I know it.
Hey people, our dress costs as much as most people's houses. Look at us. That's what that is.
Do you think
it's just too much,
that's
man.
Going away anytime in the near future?
No, I think it's going to get worse and worse. I think we live, yeah, the rich are going to get richer and they're going to rub it in our faces even more. And then people like me are going to get more and more angry every year.
But then
as
other people are
going
to watch it and go, this is so great.
Yeah, and that's what I kind of
We need
get.
Art.
Yeah, we do. We need it to survive. We need the Met Gala.
What are you
going
to do? 222 DGS. Beautiful day out there. These guys were just talking about a new Game of Thrones spinoff.
Yeah.
And last week I was asking you guys about Star Wars, and now that it's not finished, obviously, but now that we've really expanded it / diluted it, what's the final score? Mm. And at least Drudge is reporting that Jar Jar Binks is now a Darth Lord. Have you seen this?
Yeah. Darth Jar Jar.
Yeah.
It's for Lego Star Wars.
You have to speak English.
The Lego Star Wars is like, I mean, it started off for kids. A lot of adults like it, but they're like, it's the Star Wars characters,
like,
but they're in the form of a little cartoon Lego guy. Mm. Remember the little Lego guys that you could get? Yeah, that's what it looks like.
Kevin's like, a lot of adults like it's
big,
not
no,
weird.
No, I hate them. I think they're ridiculous, but they're like, it's a big deal.
For babies.
Which is somebody famous, like, who does the
not
Lego?
A big boy like me. I like the movies.
Andrew, do you know who the Lego Batman is? It's a famous actor.
He's Will Arnett.
Will Arnett is Lego Batman's voice, yeah. And they make him silly. They're meant to be goofy.
So is that going to piss off the real Star Wars fans?
I have no idea. Probably
not. I feel
everything
like,
does.
Yeah, I feel like but I feel like people like the Legos. Remember the Lego movie, which was legitimately very good.
Yeah,
it was funny.
And then all the like sequels that nobody cared about.
That was Chris Pratt too, right?
Right.
That was
how
also
is
Chris
Pratt the voice of everything and every
still hated?
Yeah, he's got
he's
a lot
so
going
hated
on.
That you can't stop giving him work.
Yeah,
and paying him lots of money.
He's Garfield. He's Mario. He's the Lego man.
He is all of us.
He's every man.
Which is funny because he kind of started off that way.
Yeah.
He was kind of an everyman, right?
Did you see people are mad at he and his wife because they're like, they're tearing down some historical home in Los Angeles to build their house?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if it weren't them, no one would probably even notice
right,
or
no
care.
One would care.
Right. I mean, there would be people who care about architecture that cared, but the general public wouldn't
it
care.
It wouldn't be like national news the way that it currently right. is.
Today is National Teachers Day. Big shout out to teachers.
Oh, yeah.
Underpaid, underappreciated.
Yeah. Jeez.
You guys all have like a special teacher?
Yeah, my mom.
Oh, I meant one that you had. But
oh,
that,
yes.
No, that's,
we all froze.
Rachel just called the teacher mom.
I did that. I did
creepy.
That in fourth grade. I did
really?
That to Mrs. Van Hoosen because she was so nice. I was like, Mom, I mean, and she was super sweet about it.
I did that in college.
Yeah. No, I definitely have.
On purpose.
My paper's late, Mommy. I mean.
I know this will shock you guys.
Boutrous Galley.
But like fifth, sixth grade, I was a bit of a jerk. Like,
oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, like, our whole group was, but there was our seventh grade teacher, though, like.
Group of jerks.
Yeah,
like,
we were.
The whole group of bullies
there's like
ran
five,
around
no,
with
we weren't,
kind of jerks.
We weren't bullies, but we were, like, smart asses, and, like, we made a nun cry.
Well, that's not good.
Why did you make the nun cry?
I don't, just being terrible.
That's
like
7 years bad luck.
I know. And here's the thing. She was also, like, the one that everybody was scared of. She was the scary, like.
What did you do?
Well, we just wouldn't stop clowning around, and I didn't directly make her cry. It was a guy, kid named Jeff Morris made her cry because.
Ooh, first and last.
Yeah, he doesn't live near here, and I'm sure he would cop to it anyway. But we were doing our games, and we just took over the class, like, throwing things at each other, and he's like being really wild at the back of the room, and she's like, Jeffrey, sit down. He said, no, and he smacked a pile of books, and they went flying everywhere.
What a bad kid.
And then we all started laughing, and then
he
crying.
Said God didn't love her anymore.
Yeah, it was, I mean... So anyway, what I'm saying is, Mrs. Proden fixed us in seventh grade because she was a boss. She had boys of her own that she, you know, she had raised, and she knew how to handle us, whipped us into shape. She's my favorite teacher of all time, and later on became a neighbor with my parents, lived straight down the street.
Did you get hit by the nuns?
No, I think we might have got a couple of rows. I got poked in the chest really hard by the parish priest after all that nonsense of making Sister Aquinas. I probably should have said that differently. With his knuckles. That made it worse.
Not better.
We got yelled at.
Only so many ways you could have made that worse, but you found one.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? There's really nothing. What were we saying earlier? Oh, there's the magazine thing. Like, literally anything you say is going to be funny there.
Whatever follows.
It doesn't matter.
It's like
what.
A wonderful Mad Lib.
You just made more nuns cry.
Anyway, shout out to Miss Judy Proden, RIP.
And so to sum it up.
Man. Dang it.
And she was my favorite teacher. Yeah. Ta-da.
Why does everyone bring the teacher an apple? Why was that a thing?
Oh, good question.
Is it just an easy snack? I mean, I love apples, so I'm all for it. But
I bet it was
you're afraid you're going to offend the apple lobby.
No, I love apples. I genuinely do.
Eckert is on the phone.
I bet my first theory would be that the kids didn't want to eat the apples, so they're like, here.
Yeah, man.
Let's see. Here we go. I found it. Google says that it was mostly in rural areas where cash was scarce and apples were everywhere and they were plentiful, so they were easy to bring.
You could find them then.
That's what it said.
It's like, great, another apple. Thank you. This is way better than a paycheck. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, I mean, we can't afford tuition, but I guess you got lots
Who
of
needs
apples.
Money or respect when you have a common fruit?
Yep. They're everywhere here. Pick one up and give it to your teacher.
I stepped on 25 apples on my way in today. Just pay me. 235 DGS. Tomorrow is KMOX Day at the ballpark, and little Kevin Wheeler is going to be throwing out the first pitch.
Woo! Oh, by the way, for $5,000, I'll throw it into the broadcast booth. No, I won't do that. I don't think I can throw it that far, to be honest with you.
Even an attempt would be pretty cool.
Yeah, there's no way I can throw it that far. It's pretty far away.
He's throwing out the first pitch. I just found out we get to go down in the field, so it'll be fun.
Yeah.
Come on down. What if they let you catch the throw?
I was just thinking that.
That'd be kind of fun.
What if we tried to pick Andrew off first base?
Yeah, that's what I would pay Kevin for. I would pay Kevin to take the ball, act like he's about to throw it to the catcher, and then just pick one random person on the side out. And just laser it right at him.
It's a dark show today.
Yeah, he's like, take someone out, Wheeler. Nah, I don't throw hard enough for anybody.
Like, what was that guy's problem? Was
he have to hit him right in the chest like that priest did you.
Yeah.
Yep. Father Dor. He was mean.
Stairway?
All right. I guess we can go in a couple of different directions here. We can go in the teacher route that we were just talking about, which would be, it's not a great.
That went so well last time.
It's not a great story. It's just not fun. And then there's the other one we can talk about, maybe make fun of toxic positivity.
Sure.
Let's do that.
So there's a guy that wrote a book about how much all of the, like, I don't know if he's saying it's phony, but just how you're like overwhelmed with people that are like, it's just positive, 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 positive. So he wrote a book about, A, it's not always okay and healthy to just do that. You do need to process negativity. Like, you do need to understand it, when it happens and how it impacts you and all of that. But then the book is called Unfollow Your Dreams. In other words, it's just a play on all this stuff. But there are a couple of things that he threw in there that were pretty funny to me as far as like people that, like, for example, he's got the scenic picture of like a sunset over a lake with mountains in the background. And it says, have a panic attack. You've earned it. Like that. He's got all kinds of things like that. What do you guys make of that whole idea that we're going to really overemphasize positive? Because I feel like in general, I'm pretty neutral. I wouldn't say I'm not a negative person and I'm not a like everything's positive, positive Pete kind of guy. And I feel like being balanced is probably the better way to be, but there are people I run into who are just like nonstop. Mm-hmm. You're the best. You're the greatest. But no, you know what? I'm not the best and I'm not the greatest. And I think I need to understand that.
Yeah, I think wear what you dig. You know, if that's what makes you happy, then do it. But it kind of gets on my, you know what, nerve, where like
the manifesting
and the affirmations, and I don't know. I've tried manifesting a lot so far. I've gotten crap.
Yep.
I don't know. I kind of like the manifestation stuff.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Because I do.
You wouldn't want to go to your concert tonight. What are you talking about? Manifest yourself up a good sinus infection.
Well, that's the thing is, like, you sometimes you are your thoughts, or your thoughts do become reality. If you are thinking of something negatively, you might have a more negative experience than if you do focus on the positive.
And she's staring right at Andrew.
That being said, I think there also is a point where it is too much positivity. Like, I think about it from the perspective of, like, doing this for a living. Sometimes you get really nice comments, and sometimes you get really mean comments, and you have to find the balance between. You can't just take the positive comments and go like, and I'm the best.
Yep, we're
and
amazing.
Everyone who has something to say is a straight up hater. It's like, no, they might actually have something that they
can have a point.
Yeah, they might have a point. There might be something you need to work on. Sometimes it is someone who just hates you and wants to see you fail.
Who still might have a point.
Yeah, who still might have a point. If you only listen to, oh my gosh, you're doing the greatest thing ever, you're going to get an overinflated ego. So you just have to, like Wheels said, like you have to find a balance, because going too far in either direction is really unhealthy.
And that was kind of the author describes himself as the overly negative person. Like, he sees the negative in everything. And he says he knows that's not okay, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what he's working on trying to fix. And at the same time, people are way over there where everything's happy and fun and you can do it. You know, you just got to try. And, you know, I think the truth lies in the middle, which is, I don't know, just like, I guess there's no money in the middle. There's no, you know, there's no excitement in the middle where everybody's like, yeah, well, of course, that's the best. But, you know, I'm going to go where, you know, I don't know. It's just that it felt like it was the same argument about extremes that we have all the time. Like, nobody wants to say, hey, you know what? It's okay if you're negative sometimes. It's okay if you're happy and positive sometimes, but nobody should be either all the time.
I'm wondering, you know, you just bring up a great point, Wheels, with there's no money in the middle. And the middle is usually reality, right? Like, the gray area is usually what's actually happening. Maybe we just don't want to live in reality. Yeah. Maybe we would rather live in the extreme negative, in the extreme, like, I'm a victim, everything's going poorly, I'm in this kind of, you know, rut in my brain where, you know, that feels good. It feels good to feel bad sometimes, you know?
We all delude ourselves with something, whether it's alcohol or pot or harder drugs or sports or
video games.
I mean, you go all the way back with humans. We're licking toads and sucking on cactus.
Yeah.
As soon as something made us wide, we're like, hey, go lick that frog.
Yeah.
You know, we just don't like reality.
Right. And I guess that's kind of the point, right? I mean, there is a little bit of everything. You have to have an escape, because in most cases, reality is not happy, happy, joy, joy. It can be, and it is at times, and at other times it's not. And sometimes it's just boredom, right? Like, a lot of the things you just mentioned, we get bored as a human, as a species, we get bored easy, which is, I think, part of the reason why we've always been good at innovating and doing things, because we're a species that needs something.
Our generation has really been screwed over by the examples of what life should be.
Mm.
Back, like, during the time of Dickens, no one was expecting a barrel of monkeys. No one was expecting everything to be awesome all the time. But with television and movies, you know, back in the 30s, 40s, 50s and beyond, now with the internet and with social media and Instagram and everyone showing their highlight reel while you live your blooper reel. I mean, our expectations of what life should be are ridiculously out of whack and ridiculously unrealistic. If you took my life and took me back to 1600, I would be killing it.
You would be a king.
And I would be a king.
Yeah.
And everyone would know it.
Yeah.
And I'd be on my deathbed smiling like a monkey.
Yeah.
But in 2024, it's like, oh, it just sucks. Everything sucks.
He's got all the food he can eat. Yeah. People will bring it to him.
Look at him.
He must be royal.
Look at him with his teeth.
He thinks he's something.
So cool.
He has this motorized contraption that moves. It is interesting, because I think that, don't you? I mean, I think the extreme can be annoying either direction, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I do think there's an interesting balance between setting expectations too high to where you're not going to reach them, which means you're going to feel disappointment, or not setting them high enough because you want to avoid the potential for disappointment. There's there's definitely a balance that goes on between those.
I've said it before. I've said it many times on this show. I want to write a book called Lower Your Expectations.
Really?
Like, that's, I think that really is the key. And I'm not saying, like, be like Eeyore. It'd be a sad sack. I'm just saying, be realistic, you know?
It's funny because I'm trying to think, like, I gradually became more realistic, but I also learned that it was fine to fail. Like, when I grew up, I'm like, I'm going to be a Major League Baseball player. That was my whole life until I got to college, and I was like, well, nope, not well, going to be that, and it was okay to fail at that.
A big difference between you and our kids is you were allowed to fail.
Yeah.
And most of our kids of our generation, Gen X going into early boomers, we really protected our kids from failure. Mm-hmm. And if they did, we're like, it's okay. It's totally fine. This is what makes you special. And
yeah.
I know we're running out of time, but I'm curious how Wheels feels about, like, the participation trophy in
sports.
Not
a fan.
Okay, I didn't think so.
And I'll tell you who else isn't a fan. The kids getting them don't care.
They know.
They don't care. Yes.
They can read.
That's the thing that drives me crazy as, you know, because we do these. We do these stupid tournaments every week. That's just the structure of youth baseball for the most part. And there are trophies at the end of them. The kids don't even keep them most of the time, right? They'll pose for a picture with their little ring that they got or the hat or the trophy. And half the trophies don't even make it out of the parking lot. They're in a trash can or whatever. Like, they know the difference between a meaningful achievement and something that's just being given to them mm-hmm. because they did
it. I was the worst kid on the Little League baseball team, and that's not, I'm not, it the worst, and it's not close. And I have so many little trophies from baseball.
And I don't say worst kid.
Well, it just says like was there.
Yeah,
and
he tried.
It's like, I don't look at those, and in my memory, I'm like, yeah, I killed it. Like, I look at them and go,
all
boy,
those trophies say allegedly.
Yeah.
Time to talk to a pal, Ricky Horton. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Dave. How are you today?
Good, buddy. So we're just talking about toxic positivity and participation trophies and things like that. So let's talk about that apropos sports and your experience in sports. And let's bring it forward, if you will, to what the Cardinals are going through right now. One of our first segments we did today with Ranji and Amy was about whether the Cardinals front office and coaching staff should be showing more fire. Of course, they're showing disappointment. They're showing concern. They're saying, hey, we're going to keep our noses to the grindstone. But we felt like maybe they're not matching the fire and the emotion of the fandom.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. You know, my experience, you know, growing up, I had some very kind of positive environment. And, you know, I would have been encouraged not to do that. And I never really did show emotion as a player. But my favorite athletes were Bjorn Borg and Walt Frazier, who never showed emotion when they played. Mm. And the idea is, I had a lot of it, but I didn't need to prove to you that I have it. Mm-hmm. And I think players that are kind of elite, you know. So Ollie Marmol telling us yesterday, if you're worried that our players aren't throwing stuff and they're throwing their helmets, they are. You just don't see it because that's not the Cardinals' way, which I think was an interesting comment that he made to us yesterday, and I agree with that. I feel like when you throw stuff and you show that, you're actually showing weakness, not strength. That's my opinion.
Interesting. Wheels.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing, Rick, because I'm looking at it in a bit of a PR way, too, where because fans don't know, right? You don't know what you don't know. And I think you know it. Anybody that covers the team knows these guys are working hard. It bothers them when it's going badly.
Right.
It bothers them more than it bothers anybody on the outside. I mean, like, they feel it more. But when you're a fan and you don't see it, you have this perception that it's not bothering them that much.
So it would be helpful, and I 100% agree with what you just said. And so that's why I'm saying what I just said about, you know, what Ollie said, talking about what's going on in the clubhouse, because I think fans need to hear that just so they can accept that. And here's the reality of it. If, you know, we are upset as fans, and I'm in that boat too. I mean, of course, I, you know, broadcast the games, but I love the Cardinals, and I don't like it when they lose. So I have that same bad feeling, but I also recognize that if I have a bad feeling because my favorite team lost, that's very different than a guy that has a bad feeling because he might lose his job and he's not going to earn his paycheck and he's not going to get a further paycheck because he's not playing well. Trust me, they have enough built-in incentives of their own to care about how they do on the field.
Guys, how realistically, how good or bad is our position at this point, 5.5, 6 games back this early in the season? If we were to turn the ship around and we start winning 2 out of 3, how quickly could we be back in the hunt if we do well?
Okay, hold on. I'm looking for my Pollyanna hat. Hold on. I got it on. So I'm like that, I'm not sorry I'm like that. I take after my mom. My mom, the most positive person I've ever met in my life. So I kind of take after her. I do not think it's out of the question to think that the Cardinals are in first place at the All-Star break. Now, do I want that to be what I think is going to happen? No. But, you're talking about 5 games. I mean, the Cardinals have made up 11 games going into September to win a playoff. I mean, to win a pennant in their history. And so it really is kind of early in my mind to be throwing in the towel. But I feel as if we want to throw in the towel, and I hear those voices. I get it. Because of what happened last year. I just think this year's different because I think there's more promise with our offense than there was promise in our pitching last year.
That's a really, really great point. Had we gone to the playoffs last year and this year
totally
started kind of weird and dinky, we wouldn't be feeling like this.
Yeah. On this date last year, the Cardinals were 14 games under .500. And, you know, so it's a big difference. But I think that's kind of why, Rick, when we were talking about this, a lot of it is about perception and feeling because last year is still connected to this year, even though from a performance standpoint, it really isn't. And it's a lot of different reasons for the struggles this year. I mean, completely the opposite struggles.
Yeah, it's offense this year. It's as simple as that. And Ollie's been honest about that. The hitters know that it's that. And, pitchers aren't going to start pointing their fingers at hitters. That's not what you do as a teammate. But, I think everybody would agree we're not hitting up to the capability. And last year, the thought would have been, okay, we're not pitching well, but, boy, I sure do hope that Zach Thompson and Jake Woodford and Dakota Hudson become Cy Young. I mean, it was a harder sell, let's put it that way. I mean, it was just a harder sell last year, not to belittle those guys, but you're talking about Goldschmidt, Arenado, Nolan Gorman. I mean, you're talking about guys who have a little bit of a track record, and Newt Barr on top of that. I feel like there's more reason for optimism that the offense is going to kind of regress to the mean. I'm not big on that always, but I think in this case I am.
Do you think the sentiment out there, to the degree that it's negative, is so negative just simply because we've always been so good? We're not the Cubs. We're not used to losing.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. We don't like losing, and we've got an element that of course, social media is kind of our predominant way of getting news. And I can't tell you the number of things that I read that are absolutely incorrect. I mean, they just are, and I'm not saying I know everything and I'm the holder of all knowledge, but I can tell you there's a lot of misinformation about kind of the clubhouse and the manager and the hitting coach. I mean, it's really just conjecture. And I think for some reason people are getting their news there. And when you get your news there, you might not be getting what's true. And again, I'm not the holder of all truth, but I recognize that that's part of the problem right now.
It's like a really good point. Cause it's hard because when people don't know, they go to whatever feels right.
Yeah.
And what feels right isn't necessarily the deal, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also, so the feeling is there, and there's also this reality in our world today that everybody will say, well, I don't get my news off of social media, but what their opinion will be based on somebody who did, and they heard it from them. So honestly, what's the difference? I mean, I don't look at it. And, it's like a player that says he doesn't kind of read his clippings. Trust me, they all do.
Have a great game, Rick.
All right, guys, thanks.